This is Bill Leonard in the CBS broadcasting booth at the Broadway Tabernacle, New York City. Here at the controversial Women's Rights Convention, now in its second and last day, things are really hot. The weather is hot this evening of September 7th, 1853, and the convention proceedings are sizzling hot, too. Up to this last session, which is scheduled to start in just a few minutes, the business of this convention has been forced to an absolute standstill. All day long, the convention leaders have tried to bring a set of resolutions to a vote. And all day long, the great crowd of spectators thronging the gallery have jeered and they've hissed and they've booed to such an extent that up to this minute anyway, it's been impossible to take a vote. And that vote, which must be taken tonight or not at all, that vote is crucial to the whole cause of equal rights for women. If the convention succeeds in completing its business, voting on the resolutions, it will be a tremendous step forward.
September 7th, 1853, Broadway Tabernacle in New York City. The Women's Rights Convention. You are there.
CBS takes you back almost a century to the days of ferment before the Civil War, when for the first time in America, the cry was raised to grant equal rights and the vote to women. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. With all the modern facilities of radio present, and CBS newsmen reporting from the scene,
You Are There!
You Are There is based on historical fact and quotation. And now,
September 7th, 1853, New York City. CBS Broadcasting Booth in the Broadway Tabernacle and Bill Leonard.
This is the last session of this all-important two-day convention. Tonight's meeting isn't scheduled to begin for a few minutes yet. This great hall seating over 2,000 people is just about full now, though. On the floor of the hall, below me here in this broadcasting booth, are seated the official delegates to the convention, mostly women, but some men. About 100 all told, from 9 states and 2 foreign countries. Truly an impressive representation. On the stage to my left, the leaders of the convention are beginning to take their places. I see Susan B. Anthony, Lucy Stone, Horace Greeley. And some of the women are wearing the black baggy bloomers, named for their originator, Mrs. Bloomer, that have become the fighting symbol of the whole women's rights movement. Up above is the gallery of this Broadway tabernacle. That's where the spectators sit. They pay 25 cents each for admission, and they've been having the time of their lives, hooting and jeering. During yesterday's sessions, the crowd seemed good-natured enough, but when it came time earlier today for the convention delegates to vote on the all-important resolution, which clearly declared that women should have specific equal rights with men, then the mood of the spectators changed. They prevented a vote by drowning out the chairman with a roar that was definitely angry, definitely threatening. Now there seems to be some activity down on the rostrum. Mrs. Mott is... No. Oh, wait a minute. Mrs. Rose is coming forward to call the convention to order. Mrs. Mott has left the stage. Funny.
I declare the
This is most unexpected. Most unexpected. Mrs. Mott, who has presided over the convention since it began yesterday morning, is not presiding over this evening's session. No, she has left the platform, and Mrs. Rose, Mrs. Rose, is now rereading the resolution. It's most unexpected. The resolutions are well known. They've been read before, discussed before. I don't know what... Just a moment.
Oh, yes, sir.
Larry Lasseur has just signaled me that he is with Mrs. Mott in a room backstage. Perhaps we can find out why Mrs. Rose, instead of Mrs. Mott, is in the chair and why the resolutions are being reread. So, down to Larry Lasseur.
Mrs. Mott, everyone is wondering why you're not presiding over tonight's session. Could you tell us the reason?
You know that at the bar of public opinion, our case for equal rights for women stands or falls with the body of resolutions now before the convention. It is essential that these resolutions be voted on.
and you're certainly having difficulty bringing them to a vote.
That's right. We've put up with this disturbance for a day and a half, but now the leaders of the convention have decided to call in the police.
Oh, I see, but why should you leave?
I am a Quakerist.
I see. It would be against your religious convictions to participate in an action like that.
My only weapon can be the truth and persuasion.
I understand. Well, Mrs. Mott, can you tell us this? Why is Mrs. Rose rereading the resolutions?
The others felt that until the police arrive, we should give the crowd no provocation for violence by trying to press the voting at this time.
I see. That certainly answers the question everyone is asking.
The call for the police and the rereading of the resolutions. Unfortunately, these are the tactics we must use to try to secure a positive conclusion to this convention.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Lucretia Mott. And now back to Bill Leonard in the CBS booth overlooking the floor of a women's rights convention.
When I was returning...
There we have it. That's the reason Mrs. Mott turned the chair over to Mrs. Rose. These women's writers are calling for police protection. Looks like a last-ditch attempt to complete their business to vote these resolutions. Right now, down there on the stage, Wendell Phillips of Boston is speaking. The police haven't arrived yet. At least I don't see any sign of them. The crowd's listening, and laughing. And now, Don Hollenbeck, out in the lobby of the Broadway Tabernacle, tells us that Isaac Cray is just arriving. Mr. Cray is known as one of the most outspoken antagonists of the whole woman's rights movement. So, out to the lobby now, and Don Hollenbeck.
Mr. Cray, would you care to give us your opinion of this convention? You've been following the women's rights movement closely for some time now.
My opinion is all on record. Now, if you...
Yes, of course, sir, Mr. Cray. About that Seneca Falls convention 5 years ago when you called it the Woman's Wrong Convention,
yes,
I remember.
Yes, yes.
I think you even called the women who organized that convention, you called them socialists. You said they deserved a straitjacket, a term in jail.
My opinions seem to have made quite an impression. Now, if you'll excuse me,
Just one moment, please, Mr. Cray, about tonight's session. Do you think the spectators will permit the convention to complete its business?
My dear sir, what happens here tonight may well be decisive, may well be a turning point from this movement. That is why I am most anxious to get inside. Now, if you will excuse me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Isaac Cray, former drama critic on James Gordon Bennett's New York Herald and one of the most outspoken critics of the women's rights movement. And now back to Bill Leonard inside the Broadway Tabernacle.
Back in the hall, Mrs. Frances Gaze of St. Louis is speaking.
The expression fell heavily on my heart. I have no fight with men. It is the mad laws and customs of society that...
Yes, Isaac Cray coming down the aisle. Oh, the crowd's giving him quite an ovation. Listen. And here come the police. They're coming through the door to the left of the stage, and... Watch it now. The crowd's quiet, watching. Now, this is mighty strange. Only two constables have come into the Broadway Tabernacle to cope with this huge crowd. Just two of them. Perhaps the others are waiting outside... No, we've just learned there are no more police on the way. No more. Well, that's it then. Two constables to maintain order over a crowd of 2,000 odd people. The women's leaders on the stage are conferring on this sudden turn of events. Now, Mrs. Rose, the chairman, is moving up to the rostrum. She's talking to Mrs. Gage, who steps aside. Mrs. Rose is about to speak to take you down to the rostrum.
Your attention, please. This convention stands in recess for 5 minutes.
You've heard that announcement. The convention will be in recess for 5 minutes. I imagine the recess is to give the convention leaders time to decide what they'll do next. Whether indeed they dare bring those resolutions to a vote with only two constables present. Now, in the few minutes left before we see which way the wind will blow,
Here is Ned Chalmer with a background report on this women's rights convention.
All this agitation in America for women's rights developed out of the abolitionist movement. A handful of women were determined to do what they could to help end slavery in the South. They very quickly discovered, of course, that there's considerable resistance to women speaking out on public affairs. All through the 1840s, they were forbidden the use of halls and pulpits. In some cities, they'd been pelted with eggs and vegetables. The body of laws and customs which these women's writers oppose is, of course, by now well known. Women cannot vote. All a married woman's property and license by law belongs to her husband. Women cannot go to college, and so cannot enter any of the professions, and so on and so on. Some of these laws and customs quite obviously work inequities, and the public discussion which the women's rights movement has launched is now very warm indeed. This afternoon, CBS reporter Don Hollenbeck interviewed a few New Yorkers at random on these questions. And here now, by tape recording, is Don Hollenbeck.
I'm standing at the corner of Broadway and Pine Street in the business district of New York City, and with me is Mrs. Georgiana Tappan of this city. Mrs. Tappan, would you please...
I think this whole business of women's rights is ludicrous.
Oh, and would you tell us why you think so, please?
It's like Mr. Tappan says. What would happen in the barnyard if all the hens decided to crow?
Yes, I see. Well, I take it then you will not be in attendance at the Broadway Tabernacle.
I wouldn't soil my skirts. Skirts, you'll take note. I'll never wear those ugly bloomers. Those women should learn only one thing, that it's woman's place to bear children and cook meals, and that's all.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Tappan. And now another lady is standing here at the microphone. Your name, please.
I'm sorry, sir. I'd rather not tell my name.
Well, of course, if you'd rather not, but tell me this. Do you have any ideas about this women's rights convention going on now?
I'll tell you why I daren't say my name. I have a job down here on Pine Street.
Oh, I see.
I have two children, and I have a husband who spends all his earnings on drink.
Yes,
if he finds out I'm working, he'll be down to my boss in a second and take all my wages. And I need all I can earn to care for my children.
Of course.
So if these women are trying to do something about my husband not being able to take my wages, I'm all for them.
I see.
But then I guess I really don't know much about these things, and excuse me, sir. Besides... the men would never stand for it, and that I'm sure of.
This is Ned Chalmer again. The tape recording you've just heard indicates at least one positive fact, that most New Yorkers are keenly aware of the sessions of this convention. Every newspaper in town is giving it front-page attention, and there's no question but what the convention sponsors hope to take advantage of the crowds now thronging New York City from all over the country and from many foreign lands here to see the World's Fair in order to enlist the widest hearing and sympathy for the cause of women's rights. They've tried, but now I see that Mrs. Rose is about to reconvene the session. So over to you, Bill Leonard.
Ladies and gentlemen!
The recess is
ladies
over.
Ladies and gentlemen!
Mrs. Rose is pounding the gavel.
The recess is over, and I hold this convention once more in session. Please, ladies and gentlemen. Order, please!
The crowd here is slowly quieting down. They want to see, of course, what steps the convention leaders have decided to take. The delegates are sitting down there calmly, their eyes riveted on the platform, on Mrs. Rose. The crowd's quiet now. Here's Mrs. Rose.
Delegates of the Women's Rights Convention, we will now proceed to put the resolutions to a vote.
Well, now the facts in the fire. It's clear the convention leaders have decided to push the vote right now, come what may, to go ahead in the face of this angry and this threatening crowd. To go ahead without any real police protection, just those two constables. Now, just a moment. Mrs. Rose is stepping aside, and Susan B. Anthony is coming forward. She's one of the youngest, most militant of the women's rights leaders. She's standing there holding her hand up and trying to get order. Yes, the crowd is quieting down a little, and she's trying to speak now.
Ladies and gentlemen, is there no appeal to your hearts if not to your reason? We have come from great distances to attend this convention. Let us finish our business peaceably. If you deny us this right, then this convention will be the first overt exhibition of the public sentiment we women are attempting to combat. And you will make of yourselves a symbol, the evidence of that general masculine opinion of woman, which condensed into law, forges the chains that enslave her. In all reason and humanity, permit us now to vote on these resolutions.
Failed. It looked for a minute as if Susan B. Anthony had this crowd won over. But they just won't allow any mention of voting on those resolutions. The crowd, you can hear them. They're going wild. They're shouting. They're screaming. The delegates are showing signs of strain. And now I see two or six delegates have gathered their belongings and they're leaving the hall. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Here comes Sojourner Truth. Sojourner Truth, whom they call the Libyan Sybil, a well-known Negro woman, once a slave herself and now a fighter against slavery. She's a big, impressive-looking woman. Tall. And she's just standing there on the platform. She's not moving a muscle, just standing there with great strength, great dignity, waiting for the crowd to quiet down. Sojourner Truth is bringing this crowd to order without saying a single word. Now she's about to speak.
I come here tonight because I wanted to tell you why women should have equal rights with men. But now I am here. And now I see what the spirit of this meeting is. Now that you have booed and hissed at me, now that I am here, I see that some of you have the spirit of a goof, and some of you the spirit of a snake. That's right, a snake. Here are women, mothers, asking for their rights, and they don't get them. When she comes to demand them, don't you hear sons hissing their mothers because she is asking for her rights? I'm around watching these things. I wanted to tell you a mite about women's rights, but instead, I'm going to sit here. And every once in a while, I will come out and tell you what time of night it is.
Well, there's the most amazing turn of events in this amazing women's rights convention. Just as things seem to be getting completely out of hand, Sojourner Truth brought this crowd into line by a sheer dignity of bearing, by her withering contempt for the behavior in the gallery. Here comes Mrs. Rose. Oh, wait. Now, here's something. A tall man wearing a high silk hat is climbing up onto the platform from the floor of the hall. I don't know who it is. But there's nothing.
Just a minute, boys.
Calm down, boys.
Give me a chance to speak my mind. My name is Root. Dr. H.K. Root of New York City. Now, a lot of these women's rights females have been calling us names. Miss Anthony says we're a wild, unthinking mob. He says we don't have any good reasons for stopping them here tonight. Well, I want to give a couple or three good reasons why a woman should stay where she belongs, in the home. Seen but not heard, if that's possible. Now, my first reason is because there was an original command from God that man should rule. My second reason is the law of physical force over woman, because man's strength is greater than woman. My third reason is because if women enter the field of competition with men, it may lead not only to domestic unhappiness, but a great many other ill feelings. If woman says she shall vote, and man says she shall not, that's reason enough why she should not! But let me say with this, these women know what they're doing. This set of resolutions, that's only the first step. You let them get away with that, and before you know it, they'll be running the place, running every last man like a puppet. This is a serious thing happening here tonight. Don't let them get away with it. We came here tonight to stop them. Let's stop them.
Ladies and gentlemen, this may be it. Dr. Ruth, Dr. H.K. Ruth, has called on the crowd to end this women's rights convention once and for all. Every person, everybody in this hall is on his feet. I don't see the constables anywhere now. Some of the men in the gallery are rushing down the floor of this hall. No telling how this will end. It doesn't look good. The women's rights delegates look bewildered, frightened. And now Isaac Clay is mounting the platform. Isaac Clay, the man noted for his attacks on the women's rights movement. This could be the final straw. The atmosphere here in Broadway Tabernacle, a fever pitch, an incendiary speech from Isaac Clay could bust this place wide open. The crowd's cheering him. Listen to him.
My friends, quiet please, hear me out. My friends, I believe I am known to many of you here. You know me as a constant opponent of the persons seated on this platform. I have lent my pen to countless articles condemning the women's rights leaders and the women's rights movement. This cause has been the butt of all the ridicule I could command. And now I come forward to make all the reparation in my power by thus raising my voice in behalf of these women and their cause. Now wait, hear me out. I am not asking endorsement of what these people stand for, but I am convinced of this. These people must have the chance to plead their cause freely, without threats of violence, without ridicule or calumny. How will it be with us if a cause, because it is a minority cause, an unpopular cause, is to be permitted no hearing? We would be a sick and intolerant nation indeed. I tell you this. Before I came here tonight, I had never met or seen a women's rights leader face to face. But tonight, I have seen these people and heard them. I have seen them betrayed. Yes, betrayed by the mayor of this city, who, I happen to know, had promised them adequate police protection to complete the business of their convention. I have seen them threatened and blocked by you up there in the gallery. You citizens who have been seduced into this show of violence. I confess publicly that I have helped in this seduction. And tonight I have seen the delegates down there, torn apart by doubt, tormented by 1,000 pressures. I have seen the convention leaders heroically trying to complete the business of this convention in the face of all these obstacles. I have been impressed by their sincerity, their dedication, the clarity of their appeal for fair treatment. And I tell you this, these people must be permitted to put their resolutions to a vote. I tell you that this movement is one which you cannot stop. It emanates from the deity himself, whose influence urges this man forward on the path of progress.
Isaac Pray has caused a sensation. He's caught the gallery and the convention leaders completely off guard. Isaac Pray, whom everyone expected to light the final match under this powder keg here tonight, Isaac Pray has completely stunned this crowd by insisting that these women be allowed to proceed. People are still standing, watching the platform. Mrs. Rose is walking quickly to the rostrum. Here she is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will proceed to the voting on the resolutions. You all have printed copies of these resolutions, so we will vote by number. Resolution number one. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye! Aye!
All opposed? Carried.
Resolution number one is passed. This is the astonishing climax to this day's astonishing event. The 90-odd delegates to the Women's Rights Convention are voting. They are voting on the resolutions declaring their rights to equality with men, to vote in elections, to own property, to get an education, to engage in professions. They are voting, and they are voting favorably, and the crowd is not interfering. This crowd's been stunned into silence by Isaac Pray's speech. Some of them, as you may be able to hear, are beginning to recover now, beginning to grumble a little, but Pray has definitely split the opposition. He's turned the tide for the women. It's a great victory for the Women's Rights Convention and, in fact, for the whole women's rights movement. One that's bound to have far-reaching repercussions. Tonight they faced a mob which at one time seemed ready to do them actual violence. They maintained their composure. They held their dignity. They faced the mob of rowdies down. Their cause has taken a very big step. A big step forward.
September 7th, 1853, New York City. The cause of equal rights for women gains a great victory. You are there.
You've been listening to the Women's Rights Convention in the series You Are There. Today's program was written by Jane and Peter Lyon, directed by Mitchell Grayson, and produced by Sam Abelow. Irving Gitlin was script editor. You Are There is a presentation of the CBS Documentary Unit under the supervision of Werner Michel. Today's cast included Grace Matthews, Minerva Pius, Ruth York, Leslie Woods, Amanda Randolph, Guy Sorrell, Charles Webster, and Burford Hampton. You Are There is brought to you every fourth Sunday. The next broadcast will be heard 4 weeks from today over most of these same CBS stations. Next month,
December 16, 1773, the Boston Tea Party. American colonists strike a powerful blow for the cause of independence. You are there.
Next week at this time, Bill Tabbert and Alfredo Antonini will be back on the stage of the Main Street Music Hall with today's hits and the great favorites from past years. Join the fine young singing star of South Pacific, Bill Tabbert, and Alfredo Antonini's 40-piece music hall orchestra next week when most of these same stations bring you another program from the Main Street Music Hall. CBS also cordially invites you to hear Guy Lombardo Time and the music of Percy Faith and his orchestra on most of these same CBS stations every Sunday night this summer. This is CBS. Hear Horace Hite every Sunday night. The Columbia Broadcasting System.